Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to the Bard's Grove.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you, Lantern?
Happy very good, very good.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Well, we're back, starting another year of the Bard's Grove. Not that quite, we haven't been doing it for quite a year, but this is our new year.
That's right. We want to welcome all our listeners, the new ones and the ones who are still with us. We know we have a wonderful journey for you tonight. Kat, what's up in the sky?
Well, as most of you know, if you've gone outside to look, the full moon is approaching. It's full this Sunday night and Monday morning, in the middle of the night, Monday morning, and it's in Cancer. It's the full moon in Cancer, which means the sun. When the sun's in Capricorn, the opposite sign is always the full moon. So it's very interesting to me when I was writing up my newsletter about this, because what I realized is we begin our new year with the energies of family and state. So it's like the structures that bind us together, the family unit and then also the country unit or the state unit. And the Cancer full moon is really about getting in touch with our needs. And it's represented by one of the archetypes that is represented by Cancer is the mother, just like the archetype of the father is associated with Capricorn. So here we are in this beginning year, in the beginning of the year, and it's taking us back in a way to our roots, to our structures. You know, what is a father? A father, I always learned, was someone who would protect us, who would teach us how to go out into the world, sort of bridge the home and the outer world. Of course, I was growing up in the 50s and the early 60s, and now things are a bit different. But still, that's the image we have of the father, whereas we get the image of the mother as someone who will love us unconditionally and who knows instinctively how to nurture us. If you think about it in terms of the tarot cards, you might think of the Empress, who is just fertility and creativity and birth, and then the Emperor, who comes in and he forms a structure. It's sort of like taking the wildness of nature and doing something with it. And that's pretty much what Capricorn is. It's the institutions that serve us and hold us together. And as you know, Lantern, Pluto, the planet of death and rebirth and evolution, is going through the sign of Capricorn. And it's turning up the muck, because that's what it does at first. It says, let's look what's decaying. Let's look at what's dead. And in Capricorn, it's our financial system. It's our government. It's our corporations. It's the things that hold our society together. And what we've been seeing for the past 2 years since Pluto's gone into Capricorn is how there's a lot of rot in the system. And this next year definitely is going to see a lot of change coming into our lives personally and also as a culture, as a world. A lot of things will be changing. And so people need to understand what it is their needs are, because when things change, people get worried, right? You get fired from a job, you get worried. What am I going to do next? You have to move, you get worried. Where are we going to live? Instead of seeing it as an adventure. And so if we could all see change as just part of life and an adventure, I think we'll handle this year much better. The mother, the mother is such an important part. It's one of the most important roles, archetypal roles in any society. Without mothers, nobody would be born. Without the nurturing capacity of mothers, we would all grow up really screwed up and not just partly screwed up. Our mothers have been under a lot of constraint over the last 3,000 or 4,000 years, because the patriarchy doesn't value mothers except as women who will give them children and carry on their name. And so, you know, the role of mother really is up for reexamination. I know back in the late 60s, early 70s, when I was first married and had children, you know, the feminist movement was almost you know, saying, don't be a mother, go out and work. And I know that at a lot of the schools, the graduate schools where my husband at the time was going, people looked down on me because I was just a mother and I worked rather than being someone who was in school getting their master's degree. And I couldn't understand that, because without good mothers, we don't get good adults. And without good fathers, we don't get good adults. So anyway, I would like to do a story about the great mother, Mary, Our Lady, as Catholics call her. And, you know, even though we feel as if the Catholic Church is mostly dependent on Jesus, or we look to God, a lot of Christians very rarely talk about Mary, the Great Mother, except that the people during the Middle Ages and beyond loved Mary. They knew that, you know, you really couldn't go to God the Father. He was very far away. And Jesus was kind of cool, and you could pray to him, but it was Mary who interceded for you. So Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who is a Jungian psychologist and a wonderful storyteller herself, she wrote the book Woman Who Run with the Wolves back in the 90s. She just released a book about the Blessed Mother and the love that she has for all of us. It's called Untie the Strong Woman. And there's a marvelous little story here about God and heaven and the mother. So this is the story called The Upside Down, Right Side Up Heaven. God the Father was strolling through heaven one day when he came across two old Roma, gypsy men down on their knees, throwing bones burnt with dots and betting piles of coins against each other. God the Father was shocked, shocked. Shaking his old white curls, he continued onward and suddenly came across an old Indian woman sitting under a big shade tree, enjoying a big, fat, black cigar. Said God the Father, this isn't right. These people don't belong here. Next, he saw an entire gaggle of little children jumping in mud puddles, and the dirtier they became, the more they were filled with laughter and joy. Then, to top it all off, he saw lovers so deeply in love, kissing each other and swearing their allegiance to each other's soul on a holy book that wasn't the Bible. Well, the next thing, though, put him over the edge. A group of painters were painting frescoes on the inside of a small chapel, and believe it or not, each one was painting God the Father a different color and race and even gender from each of the others. Abomination! This makes me sick, cried God the Father. This simply cannot continue. I cannot understand how all these people could possibly have taken up residence in my heaven. And God the Father made up his mind to find Saint Peter, who obviously wasn't doing his job properly. Well, when he found Saint Peter, he said, Saint Peter, I demand an explanation. On my way here, I saw soldiers shaking from withdrawing from drugs. I saw child prostitutes who were singing and washing their new little wings. I saw men and women who had destroyed their children being comforted. People who are still wearing pain and shame in their eyes from having drunken binges, from severing life from life. And of all the nerve, I saw a group of some prelates who were carrying on about who was right and who was wrong in church matters on earth. And I came across a woman praying a prayer I've never heard in all my life. She was chanting, Oh, my dearest God, my mother, holy is thy name. I came across priests who were catching their children in the air, dancers and revelers who begged me to join them. And one fellow who was brewing beer that smelled so good, I almost caught myself saying, St. Peter, has heaven gone to hell? All over heaven, there are men and women who have their lowrider cars pulled up on the front lawn of heaven, tinkering with the engines. There are girls in short skirts and kids who can tell you by their eyes they've seen more years of life than they've lived. St. Peter, God the Father boomed, why are you letting these people into heaven? They're not the right sort. They should have gone to purgatory first to be cleansed. Some of them need a hell of a lot of cleansing. It's not right that they're here in heaven. Oh, my dear God the Father, said St. Peter, You don't know how hard it is to keep them out. Why, they come to Heaven's Gate and I look in the book and I tell them what their judgment is. And they look at me and say, oh, no, sir, St. Peter, you must be wrong. I'm supposed to come to heaven. I've been told I'd be welcomed here. Father, God, the Father who was aghast said, and so, Peter, how do they get into heaven despite what I've decreed and despite you telling them they're not welcome? Well, God, you see, it's not easy to explain this to you. It gets a little complicated. Come now. You can tell me, St. Peter. You know, I am God, and God is a very forgiving force in the world. You can tell me. Okay, God, said St. Peter, but you're not going to like it. What do you mean I won't like it, said God the Father? Just tell me already. All right, then, you asked for it, God. These people come to the gates, I send them away, and I send them away again, and I send them away. But then they go around to the back of heaven, where your dearest son and his blessed mother let them in. And that's the story of Upside Down, Right Side Up Heaven from Clarissa Estes.
Very interesting story.
Isn't that wonderful?
Very nice. I enjoyed that.
Well, you know, in the Middle Ages, most of the people did continue to pray to the Great Mother. And, of course, Mary took over from all the ancient goddesses. But even in the theological circles, Mary was the mediator. You know, people would go to her because Christ became too far away. He became like God the Father for a while there. He was the great judge of the world. And if you go to some of the churches in Europe, as I did, you know, you see some of these scenes painted on the ceilings of the judgment. But, you know, when I was in Europe this fall, I went to a lot of churches, and so many of them right there on the altar had Mary with the child. And, of course, Notre Dame, Chartres, all of them, so many of the churches are dedicated to Our Lady. And so in very many ways, the goddess has always been with us, and now she's coming back even more. And this full moon in Cancer, this weekend, it's really about if we had the mother, if we had the Blessed Mother, the Mother of God as our mother, and she saw us as that spark of God, her divine child, how would she love us? How would she take care of us? There's a prayer that Clarissa Estes gives to Our Lady of Guadalupe, which was an appearance of the Mary, the mother, to a Mexican peasant, to a South American peasant. And she's the lady of, she's the goddess, if you will, of the Americas. But this is the prayer that she says. Have you forgotten? I am your mother. You are not alone. You are under my protection. Anything you need, ask me. Don't worry about anything. Am I not here? Am I not your mother? Have you forgotten? I love you, and you are under my protection. That's kind of a wonderful thing to know, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've always thought that those wonderful shaped door entrances of so many churches were reminiscent of the womb.
And they were. I think that they were very much so. And there's so much Mariology symbolism, if you will. But especially in America, we sort of got cut out of that. Unless you were brought up Catholic, there's not a lot of goddess or Mary energy in North America. South America was founded by the Latin countries and the Catholic countries. So they have a better connection to the feminine than North Americans.
Those I think pesky Calvinists.
Yeah, the citizens of the United States of America got cut out of the picture, cut out the divine feminine from their religious picture. And I think it's done us harm.
Yeah.
So for those of you listening, as you go out to occupy the world, and as you go to occupy yourself this year, and as you go into the world to bring about change, always remember, you're under the protection of our Divine Mother. And it's always good to be grateful, and it's always good to ask for help. And that Divine Presence, I really feel, and I've experienced in my life, will be there to help you.
Well, thank you so much, Kat, for bringing that out. That's part of the story that we don't often enough tell. Thank you.
Okay. How about you? Do you have some stories to tell us tonight?
Oh, gosh, yes. I was thinking, though, maybe you want to tell us, do you have another little Mary story to tell us?
Well, I don't have it right at hand, so I can get one, but I thought maybe...
Then I'll just go on ahead.
Okay, you go on ahead. We'll do it that way.
I've got a delightful little tale from Russia, from the steppes. It's called The Hedgehog, The Merchant, The King, and The Poor Man. How's that sound?
It sounds great. It sounds like they all need a good mom.
Well, they have quite a little adventure together. Well, here we go. The Hedgehog, The Merchant, The King, and The Poor Man. Maybe there's some economics in here, too. I don't know. We'll have to let you decide. It is enough that there was once a merchant, there was also a king, and a poor man. One day, the merchant went out to hunt, and he traveled, and he journeyed till, oh, my lord's son, he found himself in such a thick forest that he saw neither sky nor earth. He groped about like a blind man. "Here, upon my soul," he said. Whether the merchant tried to free himself by turning to the left or the right, he only went thicker and thicker into the forest. When he was there, lost 5 days in hunger and thirst, stumbling about in the great wild wood without liberation, the merchant called out and said, "Oh my God! If anyone would take me out of this great wild thicket to the right road, I would give him the best of my 3 daughters, and as a wedding gift, 3 sacks of coin." And a small voice said, "I'll lead thee out right away." The merchant looked to the right, he looked to the left, but not a soul did he see. "Don't look around," said a small voice. "Look under thy feet." Well, the merchant then looked in front of it and saw that near his feet was a tiny hedgehog. And to him he directed then his word and speech. "Well, if thou wilt lead me out, I will give thee my best daughter and 3 sacks of coin. The first will be gold, the second silver, and the third copper." The hedgehog went on ahead. The merchant walked afterwards. Soon they came out of the great wild wood. The hedgehog turned and went back, and the merchant turned his wagon tongue homeward. Now, the king went out to hunt. He went the same way as the merchant, and soon he too was lost in the great wild wood. The king went to the right and then the left. He tried in every way to free himself, and all he gained was that he came to a thicker and darker place, and soon he too stumbled around the wild wood 5 days, in the thick, thick forest, with no sign of light, without food or drink. And on the 6th morning the king cried out, "Oh my God, if anyone would free me from this dense wood, even if a worm, I would give him the most beautiful of my daughters, and as a wedding gift, 3 coaches full of coin." And a small voice below him said, "I'll lead thee out right away." The king looked to the right, he looked to the left, and not a soul did he see. "Why stare around?" said the little voice. "Look at thy feet. Here I am." The king then looked at his feet and saw a little hedgehog stretched out, and said to him, "Well, Mr. Hedgehog, if thou wilt lead me forth, I'll give thee the fairest of my daughters, and 3 coaches full of coin, the first gold, the second silver, the third copper." The hedgehog went ahead. The king followed, and in this way they soon came out of the great wild wood. The hedgehog went back to his own place, The king returned home to his castle in safety. Very well. A little while later, a poor man went out for some dry branches. He went, much like the merchant, much like the king, and he too went astray, so that he wandered dry and hungry for 5 days in the great wild wood. And whether he turned to the right or whether he turned to the left, he gained only this, that he went deeper into the dense, dark wood. "My God," cried the poor man at last, "send me a liberator, if he would lead me out of this place. As I have neither gold nor silver, I would take him in as a son, and care for him as my own child." "Well, my lord father," said a small voice, "I'll lead thee out, only follow."
"Where art thou, dear son?"
"Here, under thy feet. Only look this way, my lord father." The poor man looked near his feet, and he saw a tiny hedgehog stretched out.
"Well, my dear son, lead me out, and I'll keep my promise."
The hedgehog went ahead, the poor man followed, and soon they came out of the great wild wood. The hedgehog turned and went back to his own place, and the poor man strolled to his small home. Well, things remained this until one day, after bedtime, there was a tiny knocking at the poor man's door.
"My lord father, rise up, open the door."
The poor man, who was lying on the stove, heard only someone was knocking at the door.
"My lord father," said a small voice, "rise up, open the door."
The poor man heard. He heard that someone was knocking, and as he thought, calling out,
"My lord father, rise up, open the door."
But in his world life, he had never had a son. The third time he heard it more clearly.
"My lord father, rise up, open the door."
The poor man did not take this as a joke. He rose up, opened the door, and my lord's son, who came in to him, well, no one else other than the little hedgehog who'd rescued him in the wood.
"God give thee good evening to my lord father and to my mother as well," said the hedgehog.
"God receive thee, my dear son. Hast thou come then?"
"I have indeed, as thou seest, my lord father, but I am very tired. Therefore wake up my mother and let her make a bed for me in my chamber." What was the poor man to do? He woke up his wife. She made a little bed, and the hedgehog lay in it. In the morning, the poor man and his wife sat down to breakfast. They did not wish to forget their adopted son, but they gave him some food on a wooden plate under a bench by the fire. The hedgehog, however, did not touch it.
"Well, my son," asked the poor man, "why not eat?"
"I do not eat, my lord father, because it is not proper to treat an adopted son like some orphan or another. Therefore it beseems me not to eat at all alone from a wooden plate under a bench by the fire. Seat me nicely at the table by thy side, put a tin plate before me, and place my food on it." What was the poor man to do? He seated the hedgehog at his side, put a tin plate before him, and measured out food on it, and then the hedgehog ate with his father and mother. When they'd finished breakfast, the hedgehog spoke up thuswise,
"Well, my lord father, hast thou a couple of thalers?"
"I have."
"I suppose thou art keeping them to buy salt and wood."
"Yes, my son."
"I speak not of that. I am speaking of this. Lend me the money. I will return it 1,000-fold. Set not thy mind much on salt and wood now, but go, my lord father, to the market. In such and such a place an old woman has a black cock for sale. Buy him of her. If she asks a small price, give her double, for that will be my steed. And when thou hast bought the cock for 2 prices, twice as much, in such and such a place is a saddler. Go to him, and in a corner of his shop is a castaway, thrown away, ragged and torn saddle. Buy that for me, but give him twice his asking price. If he asks a little, give him double." The poor man put on his coat, put 2 thalers in his pocket, went to the market. bought the black cock and the castaway, thrown away, torn saddle, each one two little pieces of money. The hedgehog then saddled the black cock with the castaway, thrown away saddle and sat upon him. He then rode to the court of the rich merchant whom he had led out of the great wild wood. He knocked at the door and called out, "Hey, father-in-law, open the gate, let me in." The rich merchant opened the gate in great wonder. Who was coming? No one other than our hedgehog, riding on a black cock. "Hear me, rich merchant," began the hedgehog. "Knowest thou thy promise? When I led thee out of the great wild wood, dost remember thy promise to give me the best of thy three daughters and three sacks of coin? Now I have come for the maid and the money." Well, what could the rich merchant do? He called his three daughters into the white chamber, turned to the hedgehog, saying, "Well, choose among the three the one who pleases thy eye, thy mouth, and thy heart." The hedgehog chose the second daughter, for she was the most beautiful of the three. The merchant then measured out three sacks of coin. In the first, as he had said, there was gold. In the second, silver. And in the third, copper. Then he put his daughter and the three sacks of coins in a coach in which three horses were attached, and he sent her on his way, his most beautiful daughter, with the hedgehog. They traveled and journeyed till the hedgehog, who was riding at the side of the coach on the black cock, came up, looked in through the window, and saw that the bride was in tears. "Why dost thou cry? Why dost thou weep, my heart's beautiful love?" asked the hedgehog of the maiden.
"Why should I not cry? Why should I not weep when God has punished me with such a nasty thing as thee? For I know not whether thou art a man or a beast."
"If this is thy only trouble, my heart's beautiful love, we can easily cure it. I'll keep the three sacks of coins for myself, and thee I'll send back to thy father, for I see that thou art not worthy." Thus it was settled. The hedgehog kept the three sacks of coins, but the merchant daughter he sent back to her father. The hedgehog then took the coins to the poor man, who became so rich that I think another could not be found like him in seven villages. Now, the hedgehog plucked up his courage, saddled his black cock, sat on him, and rode away to the king's palace. Soon he stood before the king and said, "Dost thou remember, king, that when I brought thee out of the great wild wood, thou didst promise that if I showed thee the right road, thou wouldst give me the most beautiful of thy three daughters, and fill for me three coaches, the first with gold, the second with silver, and the third with copper coin. I am here so thou mayst keep thy word." The king called his three daughters to the white chamber and said, "I made a promise, and this is it, to give one of my three daughters to this hedgehog as wife. I promise because the hedgehog led me out of the great wild wood, in which I wandered for 5 days with neither food nor drink. He saved me from certain death. Therefore say, my dear daughters, which of you will agree to marry the hedgehog?" The eldest daughter turned away. The second turned away also. But the youngest and fairest spoke thus,
"If thou, my father the king, hast made such a promise, I will marry him. That the will of God be done, if he has appointed such a husband for me."
"Thou art my dearest and best daughter," said the king, and he kissed her again and again. Then the king measured out three coaches of coin, seated the princess in a chariot of gold and glass, and started her on her journey, amid bitter tear shedding, and with the hedgehog, who rode at the side of the chariot on his black cock. They traveled and journeyed across 49 kingdoms till the hedgehog rode up to the chariot, opened the window, looked in, and saw that the princess was not weeping, but was in the best cheerful humor.
"Oh, my heart's beautiful love,"
said the princess. Why art thou riding on a black cock? Better come here and sit at my side on the velvet cushion. Thou art not afraid of me? Said the hedgehog. I am not afraid, said the princess. Thou art not disgusted with me? Said the hedgehog. No, if God has given thee to me, then thou shouldst be mine. Thou art my only and most beloved wife, said the hedgehog, and with that he shook himself, and straightway turned into such a pearl-given, charming, 24-year-old king's son that tongue could not tell, golden-haired, golden-mouth, golden-tooth. And the black cock shook himself 3 times and became such a golden-haired magic steed that his equal would have been sought for. The cast-away, thrown-away saddle became golden. Everything on it was gold to the last buckle. The king's son then picked out the most beautiful place in the kingdom. Standing in the middle of this, he thought once, and suddenly that instant there stood before him a copper-roofed marble palace turning on a cock's foot, and in it every kind of the most varied and beautiful golden furniture. Everything, everywhere, was of gold, beginning with the mirror frame and ending with the cooking spoon. The king's son conducted the beautiful golden bird, the fair princess, into the pearl-given palace, where, like birds in a nest, they lived in a quiet harmony. When the merchant's 3 daughters and the 2 elder princesses heard of the happiness of the youngest princess, how well she had married, in their sorrow, one of them jumped into a well, another drowned herself in a hemp pond, and the 3rd was drawn dead out of the river Tziza. In this way, 4 of the maidens came to an evil end. But the 2nd daughter of the merchant gritted her teeth venomously at the princess and made a firm and merciless resolve that she would embitter her life's happiness. She went, therefore, to the palace, found service in the guise of an old woman. She, the devil-given, came at a critical time, for the Birkus king had declared war against the king's son, and the princess, while her husband was in the field, was left to the care of the merchant's daughter, disguised as an old woman. Milk might as well be confided to a cat as the princess to that cockroach of the underground kingdom. While the king's son was gone, the Lord gave the princess 2 beautiful children. The old woman packed them into a basket, put them under a tree in the woods, and then ran back to the princess, who, recovering from a faint into which she had fallen, asked the old woman to give her her children so that she might embrace and kiss them. The Prussian king, king of Prussia, high queen, answered the old woman, what is the use in delay or denial? They were 2 untimely hairy monsters. In to save thee from terror at the sight of them, I threw both into the river. The 2 children slept quietly under a tree till a white deer burst with great noise through the thicket, went straight as if sent, taking the basket, hung it on his antlers, and then the white deer disappeared into the forest, went on until he came to the bank of a stream, where he called 3 times. The forest maiden appeared as if by magic, took the basket with great delight, ran panting into her own palace. The 2 children were 7 years with the forest maiden, who reared them carefully as if they had been her own. Hear upon my soul what came of the affair, and what did not. The forest maiden once set the little girl with a green jug for water, and enjoined on her rigorously to be careful not to break the jug. The little girl did not let this be said twice. She was obedient and attentive. She took the jug and was at the well in a moment. When she came, she saw a little golden bird flying around the well. Being a child, she wanted to catch the golden bird, and therefore ran with the jug in her hand until at last she saw that only the handle was left. The little girl was terrified. She burst into tears and sat at the edge of the well and cried. The forest maiden waited and waited, but she could not wait longer. Therefore, she sent the little brother with a second jug and told him sternly to be careful and not to break the jug. The little brother went the same way, for he also, like children at that age, barely saw the golden bird that he wanted to strike it with the jug, which he whirled around until only the handle remained in his hand. And then he too burst into tears and sat by his sister. There the two were crying at the edge of the well. Here, upon my soul, the golden bird pitied the children and asked, "Why do ye cry? Why do ye weep, pretty children?" "Oh, pretty bird," answered the boy, who had more sense than his sister, "why should we not cry? Why should we not weep? We shall be flogged for breaking the green jugs. Our dear mother will whip us." "Oh, my children, she is not your own mother. She is only your foster mother. Your father and mother live far from here, beyond those green mountains. So if you follow, I will lead you home." The two children wanted nothing else. They went back to know more of their foster mother, for they would be flogged. But they followed the golden bird, which went always before them, and they traveled and they journeyed till at once in the forest they came upon a great heap of gold. Near this gold was a number of dice, as if someone had been playing there. The little boy and girl each took a handful of gold and went further. They traveled and journeyed until they came to an inn, and since they were weary and it was evening, they went and asked for lodging. The three lords there were playing dice. The two children at first merely noticed that they were playing, and at last the boy took from his pocket the handful of gold and began to play in such a fashion that he won all the money of the three lords, and then one of them spoke thus wise. "Well, my dear son, I see that thou hast good luck. I have in a certain place a charming flower garden. In the middle of that garden is a marble palace, and the palace has this peculiarity. If it is struck on the side three times with this golden rod, it will turn into a golden apple. And thou mayst put down the marble palace and the flower garden in any part of the world if thou wilt strike the golden apple with this small golden rod. I will bet now this flower garden and this marble palace, if thou canst win, they'll be thine." The little boy agreed, and he won. Fortunately, the flower garden and the marble palace. The other then gave him the golden rod and showed him where the garden and the palace were. The next morning, the children sought out the garden and the palace, which the boy struck three times on the side, and it turned into a golden apple. He put the apple in his pocket and strolled on homeward. The little golden bird flew always ahead of them. They traveled and journeyed till one time the golden bird stopped and said, "Well, dear children, now we are at home. Put down the golden apple on this spot, strike it three times with the rod, and ye will see what a beautiful marble palace and flowery garden there will be, speaking to the seven kingdoms. The report of the palace and garden will circulate immediately, and the king himself will come and look at them. Him ye must honor as your father, for thou, my little boy, art the king's son, and thou, my little girl, the king's daughter. Dear children, here in a golden frame is a picture, which, given your arms and name, hang this picture in the palace, in the best place, but lest it be seen, cover it with velvet, and show it to no man save your own father. When he asks what that picture is, draw the velvet from it, and the rest will follow." So it happened. The two children hung up the picture in the best room of the marble palace, covered it with velvet. Now the report ran to distant parts of the kingdom. There was a charming and wonderful marble palace in such and such a place, and the people hastened from the seventh province distance to look at it. So the report came to the ears of the king himself. The king decided straightway to look at the flowery garden in the marble palace. but he had hardly conceived the idea when the old woman gave him a drug. The king fell ill and could not see the flowery garden in the marble palace. And then the old woman, without invitation, stood before the king and said, "Hi, king, if thou art so curious to see the flowery garden in the marble palace, then I will go and see if they are as beautiful as report says, and tell the story to thy highness." The king, in one way or another, agreed, and the old woman went to see the garden, but to bring the two children to evil destruction. The wicked creature tried, but succeeded not, for her weapons broke. Not to confound one word with another, I will tell the whole tale in order and accuracy. The old witch had barely reached the famous flower garden when the two children hurried before her and showed her everything from root to top. And the old piece of leather began to talk thus. "It is true that the garden is beautiful, but it would be 7 times more beautiful if ye would bring the world-sounding tree. What must be done to get that?" asked the little boy. "None other than this," answered the old skeleton. "In such and such a place is an enchanted palace, is the world in the world-sounding tree, but you must go for it and bring it." With that, the old witch took farewell of the two children and strolled home. But the boy had no peace from that hour. He wanted to go and bring the world-sounding tree. Therefore, taking farewell of his sister, with bitter tear-shedding, he set out for the tree. He was going and traveling across 49 kingdoms till he came to the dark castle. And this was the first enchanted castle. A big, lame, hairy devil stood there on guard with a fearful whip so that no man might enter. The hairy devil shouted very angrily at the boy, "Stop! Who's there?"
"I?" answered the little boy.
"Who is I?"
"It is I."
"Art thou Yanushka?" answered the devil.
"I am."
"What journey art thou on?"
"I am looking for the world beautifully sounding tree."
"Hast thou not heard of it, my lord elder brother?"
"I have not heard of it, but in such and such a place my brother stands guard. And if he has not heard of it, then no one in the world has."
Yanushka went forward on the right road and in search of the world-sounding tree. He traveled and journeyed till he came to another enchanted dark castle. And there a big, lame, hairy devil was standing on guard, who shouted out, "Yanushka!" in great anger. Our Yanushka was much braver now, for he knew he had nothing to fear.
"Who is it?"
called out the devil.
"Art thou Yanushka?"
"I am," he said, "at the service of my lord's elder brother. Why art thou journeying here in this strange land where even a bird does not go?" "I am looking for the world's beautifully sounding tree. Hast thou not heard of it, my lord elder brother?"
"What is the use in delay or denial? I have not heard, but in such and such a place my elder brother is on guard, and if he knows nothing of it, then no one in the world knows."
And with that, Yanushka moved on toward the third enchanted castle. And when he came to it, there was another big, lame, hairy devil on guard, who called out in great anger to Yanushka,
"Who is that? Thou art Yanushka?"
"I am. Why dost thou journey here in this strange land, where even a bird does not go?"
"I am looking for the world-sounding tree.
Hast thou not heard of it, my elder brother?"
"Ho, ho, Yanushka, of course I have. It is here in the garden of this enchanted palace. Thou mayst take it, but only if thou obey my words. If thou dost value them or dost not observe them, thou wilt never see God's bright sky or the shiny day. I only want to say this. Here is the golden rod. Strike the wall of the enchanted castle with it 3 times, and straightaway a door will open before thee. In the very middle of the garden thou wilt find the world's beautifully sounding tree. Go around it 3 times, and then hurry like a shot arrow with the speed of a dog, or the stone wall will close and thou wilt remain inside. And if thou art once shut in, God have mercy and pity on thee, for that instant thou wilt be turned to stone.
This is my word and speech, and if thou cling to it, thou wilt be lucky. If not, thou'll be wretched forever. The boy took the golden rod, struck the side of the enchanted castle with it. That instant the door opened before him. The king's son did not inquire much whether he might enter or no. In a moment he ran through the door and straight to the garden. Every kind of singing and dancing maiden came to meet him, some with citharas and harps. Some played on cymbals and begged him to play and dance. Some offered him rich food and drink of every kind, agreeable to taste. But the king's son had no mind to eat or drink. He pushed aside the maidens and ran to the very center of the garden, where the world's beautifully sounding tree was. Then he went around it three times, turning toward a point where he had come. That done, he rushed from the garden, and 1,000 times lucky was he. It was not the same for him to be a few minutes later, for the door closed and bit off the heel of his boot. But he did not care much about the heel of his boot. He ran home on the same road over which he had come, and when he arrived, the beautiful world-sounding tree was in the middle of the flowery garden. Hitherto, the flowery garden had been in good time. But now, the fame was 10 times greater, so the people came from the 7 worlds to look at the tree, and the report reached the king himself, who determined in his mind that if he had not seen it, he would now at least go to see it. As soon as the old witch divined his thought, she put a powder in his coffee so that he became sick and was not able to leave the room. Then she stood before him without invitation and said, "High king, as thou highness is sick, I will go to see the world-sounding tree and see if it's as beautiful as reported, and I will bring back word." The king in one way or another agreed to the old witch's proposal and let her go see the world's beautifully sounding tree. She had barely put foot in the flowery garden when the 2 children ran out to her to hear what the old woman would say this time. "Beautiful children," she said, "beautiful is the garden of itself. Beautiful is the world-sounding tree, but it'll be 7 times more beautiful. It would be if the world's sweetly singing bird were to sing upon it." "What must I do?" asked the little boy. "Nothing else," answered the old witch, "than this. In such and such a place is an enchanted castle, and thence it would be necessary to bring the world's sweetly speaking bird." Then she went back, and from that hour the king's son would not remain at home, but planned to go for the world's sweetly speaking bird. Therefore, parting with his sister, amidst bitter tear shedding, he started through the kingdom and the world to bring home the sweetly speaking bird. But he enjoined on his sister that if the 3rd day he were not at home, she should set out to seek him over a certain road. And with that, the king's son went his way. He journeyed and traveled across 49 kingdoms to the first enchanted castle, where there stood on guard a big hairy devil, who had a terrifying large whip in his hand, to kill without pity or mercy every man going up and down. Now the big hairy devil attacked Yanushka sharply and roughly, thus: "Who art thou?" "I am a lord elder brother." "Who art thou?" asked the devil again. "I." "Art thou Yanushka?" "I am." "Why art thou here in this strange land where even a bird does not go?" "I am going for the world's sweetly speaking bird. Hast thou heard of it, my lord elder brother?" "What's the use in delay or denial? I have not heard indeed. But over there lives my elder brother, and if he knows nothing of it, then no one in the world knows." When Yanushka came to the 3rd castle, the devil asked, "Why art thou here in this strange land where even a bird does not go?" "I am looking for the world's sweetly speaking bird. Hast thou not heard of it, thou elder brother, in thy world most beautiful life?" "Of course I have. It's here in the enchanted castle. Thou mayst take it away if thou wilt listen to my word. If not, better thou hadst never been born. For if thou wilt not observe my words closely, thou wilt never see God's bright sun again. I only wish to say, here is a golden rod. Take it, and with it strike the wall of the enchanted castle 3 times. Straight away the door will open before thee. Pass in, run to the end of the glass corridor and across 8 chambers. In the 9th chamber is the world's sweetly speaking bird in a rusty cage. Thou wilt find there every kind of beautiful and more beautiful golden birds. But look not at them, listen not to them, take not one of them, but take the sweetly speaking bird sitting sadly in the rusty cage. Snatch the cage in an instant, and rush from the enchanted castle if thou hadst not been shot from a cannon. The king's son took the golden rod, struck the wall of the enchanted castle with it 3 times, and in a twinkle a door opened before him. The king's son then asked few questions. Whether it was permitted or not, he ran into the room in an instant. When he was running to the end of the glass corridor, he was called by name, from the right, from the left, to stop. It is true that he was frightened, but he paid no heed. He ran straight to the first chamber. Every kind of flower and more, even more beautiful, were in the golden pots. The king's son did not touch them. He ran to the second chamber. In that there were all kinds of sweet, and he did not choose from them. He entered the third, the fourth, the fifth, and in this way till he came to the 9th chamber. The 9th chamber, as the devil had told him, was full of all kinds of golden and silver cages. And in them the golden feathered birds, more and more beautiful, were singing. But the world's sweetly speaking bird was drooping there sadly in a rusty cage and was not singing. As the world's sweetly speaking bird was not golden feathered like the others, it did not please the king's son, and he did not take it, but chose from among the many golden feathered birds the prettiest, and wished to take that. But as he reached towards it, suddenly in the twinkle of an eye, he was turned to stone, and the door of the stone wall closed before him. Now, the little princess, every God-given day, spread the table for her good brother, but he did not come. Every God-given evening she went out before the house and waited till nearly midnight. Then she spread the bed for him, but he did not lie in it. So the first day passed, and the second day, and then the third day after day, but still the dear brother came not. Therefore the princess, crying and weeping, went out to look for him. She journeyed and traveled upon the trail until she came to the first enchanted castle, and then the second, and at last the third. The devil there stood on guard, with a great whip like a chain, so as to strike on the head without pity or mercy, every one going up or down. And he shouted angrily at the little girl, "Who art thou? Art thou Maruschka?" But meanwhile, let it be said that this was the name of the king's son's sister. "I am." "Why art thou traveling in this strange land where not even a bird goes?" "I am looking for my brother. Hast thou not heard of him, my lord elder brother?" "Well, of course I have, of course. He's in the enchanted castle turned to stone. He had to be, for he would not obey me. Thou wilt go that way too, if thou wilt, and not hold my word." Then the little girl took the golden rod from the devil, who told her what to do with it, struck the wall of the enchanted castle with it 3 times. The door opened before her in a twinkle. The princess ran in, but she looked neither to the right nor the left. She ran straight to the 9th chamber. There she took the rusty cage, struck her brother 3 times on the side with the rod, and then ran as if a shot from a cannon. And then in a thousandfold was her luck that she did not delay in an eye twinkle longer, for the stone wall door, as it was, cut the edge off her skirt off when it closed. The princess had barely come out of the enchanted castle when she heard behind her the frightful thundering, hammering and blowing, swearing and cursing with threats. They shouted after her, "Wake thou, this and that kind of wretch! It will soon be bitter for thee!" But she did not turn to them. She ran like a hunted deer till she ran home. What was waiting for her there? No one else but her dear brother. The brother and sister then put up the sweetly speaking bird on the world's beautiful sounding tree, and the sweetly speaking bird spoke, sang more sweetly than any thither, so that when they heard it, it became 10 years younger. And if the flowery garden had been famous before, it now stood at 7 times greater fame. So that from 7 kingdoms the people came to look at it. And the king, hearing of the fair fame of the flowery garden, resolved in his mind that though he had not gone yet, he would go see it now. The old witch barely divined this intention of the king when she gave him powders and black coffee. But this time, he didn't drink. And that's the story of the hedgehog, the merchant, the king, and the poor man. How's that, Kat?
Wow, that was a great story. And I hate to be such a feminist, but the women didn't come off very well in that, did they?
Well, she did rescue her brother.
Yes, but there were a lot of evil, bitchy women in it, too, that just didn't pass the test.
Well, that just makes you wonderful women stand out all the more.
I don't know. We'll see. What did you like about that story, my dear?
Well, I'll tell you. Some of the metaphors I find just so charming. There's just so many, they stand out. The world-sounding tree, the beautiful speaking bird, my heart's beautiful love. Why do you travel here where a bird does not go? It's just such, look, I realize this is a translation of a translation of a translation of a translation of an oral narrative that's captured in words, but my goodness gracious, how generous those translations have been. How rich, I think, the language.
Yes, how beautiful. And as I can tell that there's different fairy tales going on.
Oh, yeah.
Like you can tell that the more primitive ones are probably the ones that that just have one of those stories. There were a few places where you could almost see a whole new story starting.
Well, sure. I mean, you've got the guys lost in the woods.
Yeah.
You've got the reward of the hedgehog. You've got the princess seeing beyond the mere hedgehogness of this hero. You've got the evil drone crone who says, I'll get revenge. They're too happy.
Right. It's marvelous. It's quite the adventure.
Well, thank you so much for the stories that you told tonight.
And thank you. And I guess we've come to the end of our hour, haven't we?
We sure have. There's just a couple minutes left. Do you want to mention the work that you do?
Well, I am an astrologer. I am what you would call more an evolutionary Jungian astrologer. Talk about your inner life more than your outer life. I'm a dream coach. I help people interpret dreams. And I'm going to be having an online class.
Oh, good.
I think a dream group would be really good. And so I'm going to send that out this week. But people's dreams are giving them instructions on how they're using their energy, how they're living their lives. And it's the best advisor to have. And so I love teaching people how to interpret their dreams. So I think I'm going to have a dream class online starting in February.
Okay. So all you listeners, make sure you get in touch with Kat. You can send her an email through the show, and you can certainly call in and ask a question. Maybe we'll set aside a show in a few weeks and have a call-in show where people can either tell us a little bit of the story that they like or ask you some questions.
Okay, that would be great.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Merry
meet. Thanks, Lantern.
And thank you, Kat. And with that, how about some exit music?
Most definitely.
And let's see, how about this? This is a little different. There we go. Come on, technology. Thank you, Kat.
Thank you, Lantern. To all of you, goodbye from the Bard's Grove. Merry meet.
Merry part.
Merry part.
And merry meet again.
Until next week.
The white birds for you, my dear Kat.
Gosh, thank you. Believe.
Good night, my friends.
Good night.